From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, June 18th, 2020.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Modern Pest Services, committed to offering eco-friendly pest control solutions. Learn more at modernpest.com.
As of today, the Maine Center for Disease Control is reporting another 42 cases of coronavirus in Maine. That brings the total cumulative case number to 2,878, and all 102 people with COVID-19 have died. The largest union at Bath Iron Works begins voting tomorrow on a contract proposal that was unanimously rejected by its negotiating committee. This raises the possibility of the first strike in 20 years. The current contract ends on the 21st. Shipbuilders for Machinists Union Local S6 would see a 9% pay increase over 3 years under the proposal, but they are objecting to language on subcontractors and seniority. And Maine immigrant advocates are praising the Supreme Court's ruling today that rejected the Trump administration's effort to end the DACA program. The 650,000 DACA recipients will still be protected from deportation and be authorized to work in the U.S. Julia Brown of the Immigrant Legal Advocacy Project says although there is more to be done, this ruling is a huge victory for DACA recipients in Maine.
Because they have been in limbo since 2017 when the Trump administration announced that they're going to terminate DACA. So this means that they can continue to safely live, work, and study in the United States and in Maine.
Brown says there are about 95 DACA recipients in Maine. And state education officials today outlined how schools in the state have transitioned to remote learning and what the new model has meant for students with disabilities. At a briefing of the legislature's education committee, Democratic Representative Victoria Cornfield Bangor praised the department for helping schools move curriculum online, but said remote learning has not worked for some students.
But we also know that remote learning does not equal face-to-face learning, and particularly for special ed students and the very young. I have a grandson at home who is a special ed student, so I am seeing it firsthand. It does not work remotely. He's just not motivated by a screen.
Department officials acknowledge that while some students with disabilities have been thriving in the remote learning model, others have been lagging and that the state's looking at strategies for the fall. Education Commissioner Pender Macon testified that the state's also making new investments in online education in the fall, including a large online platform of lessons created by Maine teachers. In weather tonight, clear with some fog along the coast and lows in the mid-50s to the mid-60s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and humid with a chance of some afternoon showers and thunder in the mountains and highs in the high 70s to low 90s. A new independent commission on race equity has sent a letter to Governor Janet Mills advising her on initial steps to address systemic racism in Maine. Among other things, commission members want to direct state agencies to collect data that illustrate the scope of disparities by race, ethnicity, and tribal status. And as Susan Sharon reports, they also support a truth and reconciliation process to hear personal stories about racial harm and privilege.
Established by the Maine legislature last year, the Permanent Commission on the Status of Racial, Indigenous, and Maine Tribal Populations is a diverse group. Their charge is to promote, carry out, and coordinate programs designed to improve opportunities across boundaries. And after just a few meetings, the commission has come up with some recommendations for the Mills administration, including support of LD 2094, a tribal sovereignty bill, backed by a state task force that would give Maine's federally recognized tribes exclusive jurisdiction over hunting and fishing and over certain crimes, as well as the ability to operate casinos and to regulate natural resources.
I was very happy that that was included in the letter, and that's close to my heart.
Molly and Dana is the Penobscot Nation tribal ambassador, who is also a member of the commission.
But I think right now the focus needs to be on the emergency and the crisis, and that is the violence against and murder of Black people, because I really do see all of our struggles being very interconnected. And when we lift up the most vulnerable among us, we're all going to rise together.
Other recommendations include providing CARES Act funding and technical assistance to Black, Indigenous, and people of color in response to COVID-19. The letter to Governor Mills notes that 23% of Mainers who have tested positive for COVID are Black and African Americans, despite making up less than 2% of the state's population. The group also wants to direct state agencies to collect data that shed light on social, economic, and health inequities. Commissioner Joby Thoyalil, a policy analyst with Maine Equal Justice Partners, says good data will be crucial to getting an accurate picture of outcomes for disadvantaged communities.
There's collecting it, there's publishing it so that accountability can be held, but then there's also tracking it. And if the state is going to address these disparities long term, they need to be able to measure whether or not their strategies are having an impact. Awareness is not enough. Awareness is literally the very first step.
The commission also asks for support of a truth and reconciliation process it intends to use in holding joint public hearings in every county of the state to hear from communities of color and from white Mainers about their experiences of racial harm and privilege. And finally, there's a request for funding to carry out the work. Currently, there is some administrative support from the Department of Labor and a small appropriation of $500, but that's all. In a written statement, Governor Mills said the commission's letter is a welcome beginning, and she looks forward to reviewing the recommendations, engaging with the commission, and working with the legislature to examine what can be done to ensure that Maine truly is an inclusive and welcoming state that provides a fair shot and opportunity for all. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Across the country, the coronavirus is infecting people of color at higher rates than the rest of the population. The same is true in Maine. Black and African American people, as we have heard, make up less than 2% of the population in the state, but they account for more than 20% of all COVID-19 cases. That fact is hitting the immigrant community in Lewiston especially hard. And as Patty White reports, some local leaders say the state needs to do more to support those who are sick and to prevent further spread of the disease.
Lewiston is the second largest city in the state, and the county it's in, Androscoggin, has the second highest percentage of Blacks and African Americans at more than 5%. Most are part of the immigrant community and live in dense housing in downtown Lewiston. Some of the housing is just steps out the door from the office of the new Mainers Public Health Initiative, where Abdul Karim Saeed is the founder and executive director.
You see, all this is almost, I think 95% is a new Mainers. And this one and this one too.
If we cross the street.
Saeed is joined by Abdi Kadir Nageye. They're both members of a local emergency response task force for COVID-19 and new Mainers.
Those dark gray buildings.
Nageye points to several four-story structures a block away. These also contain apartments that are home to many new Mainers. And he says a prime setting for the coronavirus to spread.
That's where a lot of big families live. It's very congested. They all use same rails, same stairs. It's only one door that they all use.
Advocates say if you combine this dense housing with the fact that many in the community work in essential jobs, such as cashiers in healthcare and manufacturing, it's not a surprise that cases of COVID-19 have taken off here. The interim CEO of the B Street Clinic in Lewiston, Colleen Elias, says the health center started offering walk-in testing about a month ago after local hospitals alerted them to an uptick in cases in the new Mainer community. Of the 90 people tested by the end of last week, nearly a third were positive. And the vast majority of those who tested positive, 96%, says Elias, were new Mainers.
That is alarming, and I do know that those rates would be much higher if we had more people showing up to be tested.
But many are reluctant to test, she says, and that's not unique to the new Mainer community.
Regardless of the race or religion or background or any other factor, there seems to really be fear around what happens if I'm told I need to quarantine.
Because quarantining isn't really an option, says Abdi Kadir Nageye. He explains that new Mainer families are often large and there isn't enough space in apartments to isolate individual members. The State Department of Health and Human Services says it has a contract with a space in Lewiston where people can go to quarantine. But Nageye says he's unaware of anyone being offered that choice. And even if they were, other problems can arise.
For example, if the mom is positive and you tell them to leave or isolate yourself from the other children, and you don't have any plan for those children, who's going to take care of them and who's going to cook for them. So that's why the numbers are so high. That's why people cannot, they don't have resources available. So they have no choice but have that interaction, whoever is positive or not.
Abdul Karim Saeed says there are also trust and language communication issues for members of the immigrant community with contact tracers, the people who follow the chain of transmission for infections.
When contact tracing call a person to ask him his close contact, they don't tell exactly the close contact because of fear. One of a person who infected told me that, why they asking me the person that I contact with them? Because if I mention their name, maybe those people are working. So they will be telling them to sit down from their work and that they will lose their income.
To tamp down cases of coronavirus in their community, Saeed and Agaye say they need more collaboration from the State Center for Disease Control. They say members of the New Manor community, who understand the language and the culture, are ready and willing to be trained as contact tracers. They'd also like to establish door-to-door mobile testing to identify more cases. That's an option that CDC Director Dr. Nirav Shah says his agency is exploring. In his press briefing Wednesday, Shah said that infection rates among racial and ethnic minorities are unacceptable and are one of the top priorities for his agency.
We've made some progress, but I will be the first to acknowledge we're not there yet. We've got a lot more ahead of us.
Aaron Gay, the executive director of Healthy Androscoggin, says the CDC is working with a public health system that's been weakened in recent years. Unlike Portland and Bangor, Lewiston doesn't have a public health department.
What we've lost is time. We're still building some of the systems that I wish we had had a couple of months back. We really need to figure this out quickly, and that's no easy task.
Another member of the New Manor's Emergency Response Task Force for COVID-19, Rashid Shankel, says the virus has been described as the great equalizer because everyone is at risk. But he says it's clear that the risk for people of color is higher and acknowledges that that's a challenge for the public health system.
You know, I'm not blaming CDC because we are caring for a new people with a new culture, with a new disease that we have. We have two things new, so it's very difficult for them.
But he says he hopes that the state and the community can forge a strong partnership to find a solution. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
During the first wave of protests in Portland over the death of George Floyd, three local artists painted a memorial mural for Floyd and other victims of police violence on the brick wall of a downtown building. Muralist Ryan Adams talks here about what he hopes the image will convey and about what it's like to be a Black artist in Maine.
The main landscape is what you see in a lot of fine art galleries around here. I am doing nothing like that. I don't look like the people that are in that sphere, and I'm not painting like them. My name's Ryan Adams. I'm 35 years old, born and raised in Portland, Maine, and I am an artist, muralist, and designer. The entire wall was a collaboration between myself and two other Portland artists, Mike Rich and Jason McDonald. So we kind of started the discussion and came up with the idea of painting a portrait of George Floyd, and then the statement next to it, Again We Rise, with the names of all the other people who have fallen victim to police brutality over the last few years. And I shouldn't even say all of the people, because when I started kind of digging in to find names to put on the wall, the numbers are terrifying. This is actually, to be completely honest with you, the first time someone has asked me about my experience of being a creative or an artist of color in Maine. That alone is pretty telling. I think that it is easy to overlook an artist of color. Say if you're an art critic, the majority of them that I'm aware of are white. They're looking at emerging artists and they see a Black guy with tattoos and spray paint, and then they see the young white art student who looks like they're nephew or niece, I would imagine that they may tend to, whether it's their intention or not, go towards the more familiar person. When you go to gallery openings or you're around that world and you see who's getting the looks, who's getting the next chance, it's very obvious. You see folks like myself or, folks in situations that don't quite fit into that already existing world, working just as hard, doing new things, trying things out, and are just overlooked. I don't think that people set out to give that feeling or impression. I mean, maybe some do, who knows? But I've never harbored any feelings of ill will or like any negative feelings. I feel like if anything, it's made me more scrappy. Having my own style of work large and out there and on the side of buildings. A part of me was driven to work harder on that because I felt that I would not be accepted into this fine art sphere. I think those are kind of the things that drove me to push further on that side. It was kind of feeling as if I'm not going to be accepted here. That's okay. I'm still going to get my stuff out there.
And Ryan Adams is one of three artists who painted a mural in downtown Portland honoring George Floyd and other victims of police violence. He's looking next to start a project documenting local East Bayside residents in honor of their work building up that community. He spoke with Maine Public's Willis Ryder Arnold, who's produced this story. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 o'clock for a conversation about the story and meaning of Juneteenth. I'm Nora Flaherty.